Welcome to the full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 12:44 PM. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 13th. I thought we'd kick off today with the euro. It's been down on consecutive days, and I think it's like 8 out of the last 9 days on the downside, and that is certainly confirming resistance in the region of the trend mean, and it's reasserting the downtrend and medium-term supply dominance. But I think we have to at least consider, why is the euro so weak? Well, I guess part of the reason is because investors are looking at the euro and thinking, well, golly, if Europe's exports are heavily reliant on demand in China and China is slowing down, then that is going to have a knock-on effect for the euro, and it's probably going to represent additional downward pressure on interest rates. We've certainly seen that the total of negative yielding bonds has been accelerating. When, for example, we look at the Greek 10-year government bond yield, for example, it's down now to 94 basis points, and there's a clear downward trajectory here. When we look at that trend, I don't think anyone would have been willing to countenance that Greek bonds yielding in excess of 40% back in 2012 would be yielding less than 1% in 2020. That's one of the most incredible rallies in a bond price I think anyone is ever likely to see. But that's at the reasonably long end of the curve. If we then start to shorten it up, then we can see, for example, that bonds due to mature in 2024 have only got a yield of 26 basis points. That will tell us just how inverted yields are. When we look then at Germany, everything out to maturities of 30 years are in negative. 30-year maturities are in negative yielding territory, and it's a similar situation with Japan. Well, that is putting downward pressure on the euro, but I think the biggest anomaly that we have at the moment is that the euro might be declining in a rather rapid fashion, and in nominal terms that is certainly helping to support the stock market, and the Euro Stoxx index unwound all of its initial decline in here today. We're seeing that we've got pretty impressive nominal price appreciation moves in a significant number of European markets, and the DAX index, which is a total return index, has actually popped on the upside to new highs. The pound has been rather firm by contrast, and the FTSE 100 was in negative territory in here today, and I think the strength of the pound is not going to be an especially welcome development for investors, and particularly from the perspective of the Bank of England. The cross rate between the pound and the euro, and I certainly need to be pressing the right buttons to bring up the chart, but it has now popped on the upside. We're back testing the 120 area. There is the real potential that this is base formation completion territory. I think we do need to get some more back history to get some perspective of just how low the pound is relative to the euro. And it has been trading at these low levels since the aftermath of the credit crisis. Well, of course, that has created a competitive advantage for the UK from a manufacturing perspective. It's just that the UK doesn't have a lot of manufacturing anymore. It certainly helped to improve the competitiveness of the economy from a services perspective, which is where the vast majority of the UK's income comes from, particularly the financial services sector. Boris Johnson just fired the Chancellor, or the Chancellor of the Exchequer just resigned, and the pound rallied on the back of that. What it pretty much does now is free up Boris Johnson's hand in pursuing a fiscal stimulus, and that is likely to be beneficial to growth. The question is, why should the pound be rallying against an environment where they are going to be printing pounds out of thin air? But it does remove some economic uncertainty, and I think that's the primary reason why the pound is firming in here. However, the strength of the pound is likely to be a bit of a headwind in the short term to the nominal price appreciation of the UK stock market. But I think it is, I think it's worth taking a look at the, for example, the Eurozone ETF from a US dollar perspective, because the dollar has been resurgent, and it is the Eurozone ETF is still rallying here, but it's not doing so in nearly as impressive a manner. Then when we think about the outlook for the UK from a foreign investor's perspective, then we can also see that it is rallying. It has bounced from the region of the trend mean, but it is a long way from approaching the peaks put in all the way back in 2014, for example. That is, I think, that helps to put into perspective just how much of an influence the trading in the currencies has had. But what I would like to do is to come back to the point that the risk as it's being manifested in China is primarily being priced into the euro, and it's the euro is also falling because of carry trades, because of the outlook for persistently low rates. People are shorting the euro, and then they are reinvesting the proceeds in higher yielding or higher performance assets. So there is also that perspective that it isn't simply because of what's going on in China, but also because of the carry trade. And if we look at what's going on in China, well, China just increased the number of infected people with the coronavirus by 15,000. Now, that they didn't all suddenly crop up over the last 24 hours. That number of people have been either excluded from the previous count, or they have been newly diagnosed. The renminbi is still pausing here around the 7 level. When we think about the futures traded market, the CSI 300, then it is also continuing to push back up here, although it was in mildly negative territory in here today. But I think the more important point here is when we look at the shares of companies like Alibaba, then they're still holding onto this rebound from the peaks put in 2018. Now, the share was in negative territory in here today, but certainly not in a dynamic manner. And it has rebounded really quite impressively over the course of the last couple of weeks. When we look at the evidence that we have, rather than the statistics that are being issued, there was an instance today where some of the people that had been quarantined following their repatriation from Wuhan in San Diego, two of them have now contracted the disease, but they were on separate flights. They had no previous contact with one another, and they've been quarantined in separate facilities. So what that suggests is that this is a highly communicable disease. That's, I think, one of the most important points. And it has a mortality rate well in excess of the seasonal flu, whether that is at a 1% or a 3% or a 5%. It's worth bearing in mind that the mortality rate from the seasonal flu is 0.1. So even at 1%, it's 10 times more deadly than the seasonal flu. If it is highly communicable and a very severe form of the flu, well, that does suggest that it's going to be difficult to get under control, that the people that are going to be most susceptible to it are exactly the same kinds of people susceptible to the flu, so the very young and the very old, and it is going to take a long time to get under control. The impact that it is having on consumer sentiment is not something that's easy to measure. And Alibaba came out today and said that it is going to be a meaningful effect, at least for the first quarter. And I think the vast majority of investors are thinking that this is nothing more than a first quarter phenomenon. Well, if we think then about all of the companies that are some of the biggest importers of goods from China, well, Amazon has broken on the upside, and it was in mildly negative territory in here today, but it so far is holding that breakout. Target has also popped on the upside over the course of the last 3 months, and it has found at least near-term support over the last couple of days. Walmart has also been resurgent and has bounced from the region of the trend mean over the last few days. Costco is pushing on to new high ground and had just a brief consolidation over the last couple of months. So all of these major importers from China are really not exhibiting any kind of concern about the integrity of their supply chains. But the integrity of the supply chain is 100% dependent on factories getting back to work. And so far, that has been a pretty slow process. There are hundreds of millions of people under some form of quarantine. And the migration of people out of the major industrial centers back to the hinterland for the New Year holiday will be reversed once travel restrictions are relaxed, but that has just not happened yet. It does suggest that we're going to have a quarter at least of businesses scrambling to try and get enough workers to fulfill orders, and that is an uncertain environment, but we're seeing no evidence of it in the companies that are most susceptible to an interruption to their supply chains. I think one of the potential rationalizations that we have here is that a lot of these companies went through a very significant inventory build in 2019 because they were worried about the trade war. So they may have enough of inventory to tide them over for a while, and this would be an opportune moment to run down some of that inventory in order to levelize their demand structure. But that's a supposition. I don't have any clear evidence of that or any statement to support it. So I'm simply just thinking about the consistency and the commonality that we have across a significant number of these companies, and there's got to be some reason for it. The other market that has been really quite steady has been palladium, and the price was up another $26 in here today, and it is pushing back up towards the upper side of this range that has persisted now for most of the last month. There were two clear downward dynamics, and that has obviously held up the price for a while, but it is worth considering that this range has been a little more volatile, but in terms of its amplitude, it is not that much larger than the peak to trough swings we've had for the last three of those pullbacks. Now, when we look at the point and figure chart and look at it in terms of a 1%, then when we look at data going back to 2018, there have been relatively similar sized reactions. When we then think about just looking at a 1% or 1% box size, then the size of the reactions become much clearer. And we still have this sequence of ranges, one above another. But again, this is not pricing in any risk from a slowdown in vehicle demand. So we still have a very wide overextension relative to the trend mean, and this price could continue to move higher. If it, however, moves into a somewhat larger pullback and takes out the recent lows, well, then we will certainly have a peak of near-term and most likely medium-term significance. And The gold price was also a little steadier in here today, up about $10, and continuing to range here in a narrow band between $1,550 and $1,600. I think the much bigger picture here is that gold is back on a recovery trajectory, and that isn't something we've been able to say for really quite a long time. And against this background of recovery, the all-time peak from back in 2011 is really not all that far away. Then, one of the biggest questions I think people are going to be asking is, what about the oil price? And the price has bounced over the last three sessions. We are seeing at least near-term support coming in around this psychological $55 area, and this is the lower side of a prolonged trading range over the course of the last 14 months. There is a short-term oversold condition, and if the rally persists through the close tomorrow, then we'll have an upside key reversal on the weekly chart. So what that would suggest is that investors are willing to bet that the drawdown in terms of demand of nearly 3 million barrels a day from China is a short-term phenomenon. If it is a short-term phenomenon, then one of the primary reasons for that will be the massive sources of additional liquidity hitting the market. And that is particularly relevant for China, where they are embarking on a very significant stimulus. Then when we think about the 10-year Treasury yield, it came all the way back down to test the 1.5% level, but we are starting to see some steadier action in the yield over the course of the last week. It's going to have to do more than that, though. We need to see a sustained move above the trend mean to confirm that this market is back in a supply-dominated environment. When we look at the quantity of debt with a negative yield, then this is also representative of some risk getting taken off the table and a desire for safe havens. That's also supported by the relative strength of gold, but the quantity of debt that has got a negative yield is still around 13 trillion, and it is holding the breakout from that downtrend that really persisted all the way through until the end of January. I think that it is likely we are moving into a bubbly phase in terms of the stock market. The Nasdaq is looking increasingly overextended relative to the trend mean, but it has not stopped. And here again we have a sequence of higher reaction lows and small ranges one above another. If the consistency of the trend continues, then we're likely to have some consolidation of the most recent move over at some point over the next couple of weeks, and the reaction shouldn't be more than the one that we saw right towards the end of January, which was approximately 300 points, considering that the price is now at the 2600 or 9600 level. That could take it down to test the upper side of the most recent one of those small short-term ranges. The fact is that back when we had the SARS epidemic in 2003, there was some panicky action in the market. Of course, it was also because we'd had the market deteriorating for nearly 3 years prior to that, and people were still worried about the recession that had been brought on following 9/11 and the bursting of the TMT bubble. So there was a sell-off associated with the SARS epidemic. Now, arguably, this is a much more widespread epidemic, and yet we're not seeing the same kind of sell-off. I think that is because investors have been conditioned over the course of a decade where market prices have been inflated by access to liquidity. And that willingness to ignore risk and completely rely on access to liquidity in the pursuit of a momentum strategy, which is essentially what ETF investing is, then that is representative of bubbly activity. It is something that we need to be aware of, that we have had a phenomenal move on the upside, that there are a number of extraordinarily large companies which are looking increasingly overextended, and we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, provided they remain consistent. It's when the liquidity eventually runs out, and when we start to lose uptrend consistency, that is when we're going to see some, I think, unwinding of the quantity of leverage that is now being absorbed in the market, but probably not until then. What that suggests is we're still in the bubbly phase here. There is no evidence that it's over, and that the benefit of the doubt has to be given to the upside as long as that remains the case. I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.